Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Love of the podcast. I'm your host, Jordana Levine, and this week we're not talking about the moon. Nope. I thought with everything going on in the world right now, it was a good time to bring back Lunar Lover guest interviews. But not just conversations about any old thing. I wanted to bring you conversations that would be helpful while navigating this new way of life. Over the next few weeks, you'll hear from all sorts of bright sparks, bringing you helpful and enlightening interviews to make your time in ISO just that little bit easier. I kick off with one of my favorite people and my personal financial coach, Betsy Westcott. I know that many of you, myself included, are having to rejig their finances, whether it's due to job loss or reduced income or just being practical about the future. And while there are a few initiatives out there to help, it can all be a little overwhelming sometimes to understand what the hell it all means. Betsy is here to help us not only understand it, but make it fun and hopefully get you a little bit excited about building financial resilience. A little caveat, however, that this conversation is for general information purposes only. Nothing contained in it is or is intended to be construed as individual financial, tax, or legal advice. You should, before you act or use any of this information, consider the appropriateness of this information having regard to your own financial situation and requirements. Before making any commitment of a legal or financial nature, you should seek advice from a suitably qualified professional. Okay, with that out of the way, please enjoy my conversation with the beautiful Betsy Westcott. The reason I wanted to get you on is because you are my personal finance well-being coach. Is that what we call you? Finance well-being coach?
Financial wellness coach. Yeah.
Financial wellness coach.
Or well-being, either way.
Yeah. I think when it comes to money in like everyday circumstances, it's really hard to get your head around it and sort of work out what everything means and, you know, how you can get money to serve you and all this sort of stuff. But we're also going through this unprecedented crisis, for lack of a better word. And I think money troubles and money issues have come up a lot for people. And if you don't really understand how your finances are working and what it means to perhaps take money out of super or what are the ways in which the government's supporting me, it can be really, really overwhelming.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So yeah. I thought it'd be really nice for us to have a chat and maybe just for you to sort of explain some of the things that we're being told and don't really understand and maybe make it all sound a little bit less scary.
Yeah, well, I will do my very best. And I think it's so important because one of the reasons like I love being a financial coach is I'm not here to give advice and be like, you should buy this investment property and that stock. I'm just here to translate. Like that's kind of my job as a financial coach, is being a translator for all the jargon that's out there and being like, what does it mean?
Yeah, because it's confusing. It's like they try and trick you on purpose. I know they're not, but it's...
Oh, well, do you know what? I think I often sort of debate this amongst other financial colleagues and friends, is that like the industry assumes a lot of knowledge, but then the reality is we don't actually get taught a lot of these things. And so we're spoken to with an assumption of a base level of knowledge that actually we don't have. So if the financial industry could please invest a bit more time in speaking to people in a language that actually resonates with them and that they understand, I think we'd actually see much better results in terms of our community's financial well-being. But you know, just like anyone, when you hear something, you don't really understand it, but you feel like you should understand it. These like your shame come up.
It's yeah. funny. I've watched, as everyone has, I'm sure, a lot of the, you know, press conferences that are being held by the Prime Minister and the premiers and all of this. And they've got, you know, they've got the woman up the front who's doing the sign language. And I often think they really also need a woman up the front who's in like PR or some sort of media kind of liaison who can kind of break down what they're actually saying, because we have no idea what's actually going on.
Yeah, where's that translator? We really need to bring him out.
Make it relatable and fun and like applicable, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
What I would like to talk to you about though, before we get into the money stuff, is what's going on for you? How has this affected your day-to-day life? What have you had to shift around?
Lots of different things. It's I mean, on a physical level, I had to do 14 days of quarantine recently, and that impacted not only me but my husband. And
why
he runs
did you have to do that?
So, oh my God. So the irony, I have my day job, which I work for a large corporate organization. And, if you're at a certain level, they'll pay for you to get these health checks, which is like awesome. They do everything from like bloods to, skin care checks, your lung capacity, like the full shebang. And I'd signed up for it ages ago, and this was sort of, mid-March. That my appointment was due, and I checked with them. I was like, oh, can I still come in? You know, corona, all that. And like, yeah, fine. And then about 2 days later, I got a call from the health department saying one of the doctors from the consultation had COVID. Yeah.
So, oh, my God.
So I was like, ah, damn. Yeah, so my and so they said technically my husband didn't have to self-isolate, but because he was a casual contact, and I was like, look, there's nothing casual about our contact.
No. How is he a casual contact if you sleep in the bed next to him?
Yeah, well, because he hadn't been exposed to someone who had been, like, confirmed as a case, because I was, high risk but not confirmed. But so anyway, we made the decision that really he ought to isolate too. So we did, but he runs his own business as selling wine. And
from home?
Well, he had to do it from home.
Oh, but not usually. He's not usually working
from home.
Not usually. Okay.
No. So, you know, he had to hire some extra staff to kind of cover what he does and negotiate with his business partner about how they're going to do that. So there was that. And then work-wise, it's just like I can do all my jobs and stuff from home, which is great, and I'm incredibly lucky. I'm an extrovert. And you know how you see all those memes about please check in on your extrovert friends?
Yeah.
Because you know how this works. Send help, guys. Or just a message or something, because the extrovert in me is not coping.
Yeah, it's so interesting, isn't it? Because I'm an introvert and I work from home, so my life hasn't changed much at all. And I didn't think to check on my extrovert friends. But you're right, it's a big shake-up.
Yeah, if you get your energy from being around people, and you know, I love bantering and debating and playful and having a laugh and, you know, dressing up and heading out into the world. That's how I get my energy. And I'm just dressing up for myself now.
Are you getting dressed for work every day?
Yes. I see it as a form of self-care for me. Like, I mean, don't get me wrong, I have my like top knot, tracky dack, UGG boot days.
Yeah.
But I feel better when I keep to my routines of exercise and getting dressed and starting the day and finishing the day. So I'm still doing it.
That's good. I think that's important. I mean, I don't do that working from home, and I really should. I am usually in tracksuit pants. I sit on the floor at the coffee table rather than at my desk. Like, I do all the things you're not meant to do.
Well, I think it's what works for you though, isn't it? Like most things in life, it's just personal. Whatever makes you feel well. But if you're doing something and it doesn't make you feel well, then absolutely.
Yeah, maybe. And then you need to shake it up a bit. All right, let's talk about finances in relation to what's going on with the pandemic. I guess we were just talking about it before, but, you know, there's people are going to be sitting on a spectrum here. There's people that have lost their jobs and they don't have any income. There's people that are waiting to hear about JobKeeper. I know so many people who are sort of in this really grey area when it comes to JobKeeper.
Yep.
And so they still don't sort of know if they're eligible. And then we've got JobSeeker, only if you've got a Centrelink number. And if you don't, you're hanging on the phone for hours and it's all very confusing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And it's something that so many of us will have never, ever, like, expected to be in that position. We've had 26 years of economic growth, meaning that, like, every year the country's making money and people are generally doing well. We haven't had a recession where, you know, the economy's contracting and things are tough. So, you know, we've been here having a good time for quite a long time, and things like not being able to pay your bills or not knowing where your next paycheck is coming from is pretty foreign to most of us in the lucky country. And it's not a nice feeling.
No, but there's really something empathize. There's something very comforting about everyone going through the same crisis.
I think so. I think it kind of gives us a sense of community. And it's not just me. Like, I don't know if you ever find this, but I'm a fairly open book, and I think I do it because often when I talk about something that I'm either struggling with or is bothering me and someone else goes, hey, yeah, me too, I suddenly feel better because I'm like, oh, I'm not a weirdo, or it's not that I'm just not good enough or haven't got the right skills. It's that, you know, these are human conditions that everyone feels. So looping back to the whole we're all in this together, I think that there's comfort in community, isn't there?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the shame element that comes with a lot of financial woe sort of gets taken away because none of this was our fault. We didn't do this.
Yeah, exactly. Like, there's a great book called Black Swan, and I, of course, now can't think of who the author is, but it talks about often the things that, you know, really throw chaos into our lives are events that you really couldn't have predicted, like maybe in hindsight, because, like, you know, hindsight vision is 20/20. but it's usually these, like, black swan events that you just don't see coming. And I would put coronavirus pandemic in that category of,
almost,
like,
definitely.
This was not on my vision board, Jordana.
Absolutely not. That's so funny. Okay, so let's start with the government support. Like, what should we do if we have lost our job?
So it really depends on like how you've lost your job, because as we're hearing, there's this new term that I'd never heard of before called stood down, and we keep hearing about being stood down, which is a little different to when we traditionally think about losing your job because you've been made redundant and the job doesn't exist anymore. So just to pause on those two. So stood down is when your employer has, like, stopped operating or has seriously reduced their operating, meaning that you can't do your job right now. But it's not, you've not been fired.
Okay, so you're not unemployed.
Yeah, you're not unemployed. It's just that you can't go to work and you're not being paid. But that the job exists, it's just there's nothing for you to do right now. And a lot of, you know, you see here in the airline industries with, like, say, Virgin and Jetstar and Qantas, they've stood down most of their team. And what it just means is that there's no flights. So there's nothing for them to do. So the employer can't pay them to do their job because the work doesn't exist right now. But presumably that when we come out of this and the flights start happening again, those people will resume their jobs.
Okay.
So that's the stood down, kind of the Betsy definition of stood down versus redundant. So if you're made redundant, it means that your job no longer exists and will not exist in the future is what sort of a redundancy is. So So if you're stood down, this is where the JobKeeper payment comes in, and it just got passed through Parliament. So this is for businesses whose revenue, so the amount of business that they're doing, has shrunk by more than 30%. Mm. And there's a bit of criteria in that. You have to be making less than $1 billion. So I think that's most of us. it would be a nice problem, wouldn't it?
Oh, I'm not eligible. Making more than a billion. Damn.
Well, see, the thing is, if your revenue is more than a billion, that you can still be eligible. You just had to have a 50% contraction. So okay. Half of your stuff has to have disappeared. But so either way, so if you're in that stood down category, that job keeper payment kicks in, which is about $1,500 per fortnight. And I think it's payable from March 30th and it lasts for up to 6 months. And that's so that for, you know, companies whose work stopped and they've had to stop paying their employees because there's not enough or any work for them to do, this is the government's sort of tool to go, okay, we're going to keep paying you a notional amount to get you through, with the view that when everything kicks back up again, your job is still there. You've been able to get through and not take a new job because you've been able to sort of, you know, go into this like holding period and receive this income. So that's your job keeper. If you're made redundant, where like your employer says, look, your job doesn't exist anymore, that one's a little different. So if you're made redundant at any point, irrespective of a global pandemic, you're always entitled to your final paycheck. And then you may also be entitled to a redundancy payout. And that's a calculation based on what your salary is and how long you've worked for that employer before your redundancy was made. And the Fair Work Ombudsman website, which is a government website, has some really good guides around that. So, do check out fairwork.gov.au.
So... Have people been made redundant during this time? Is that how employers are releasing them of their duties?
So most people are getting stood down, as in, like, you know, when we hear about, oh, we're just going into hibernation for a while, most of those people are getting stood down. And the key definition, or I guess the key distinction, is that they're expected to go back to work when the economy resumes, basically. Whereas made redundant is, look, your job doesn't exist anymore. It's time to look for a new job. And so that one is where you then register for something like the New Start Allowance, or often called the Job Seeker payment. Mm. And that's, again, you go for all of these, you go to Centrelink. So hence why Centrelink's a little overwhelmed right now. But the job seeker payment means my job no longer exists. I need to find a new job. And this payment is there to help you to continue to pay your rent and buy your groceries and do your thing whilst you start looking for a brand new job. So one's on pause and one's ended is basically the difference.
And then I guess there's this real, real grey area, which is sole traders.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you're self-employed, you may be eligible for the job keeper payment. There is some criteria, and there is some really good fact sheets online. Although I also appreciate they're also very confusing, because I was even reading through them and I was like, okay, so you have to have, you know, been engaged in running your business from this date to that date. You need to have been able to prove that your income as a, you know, self-employed person is reduced by 30%,
which,
and so on.
Betsy, I just find, like, and this is just me getting personal now, because I can use it as an example. Like, if I was to compare this March with last March, mm-hmm. I'm probably making more than I was last March. But all of my potential clients for April, May and June have disappeared. So for them to be looking at you, because I think it was March that was the month that they're looking at when they're comparing.
It is for now. I'm sure as like we tick into April and tick into May, you'll look back, like you'll be able to take that month into account and then the next month into account. But you're right, a lot of it is retrospective, because for you to prove that you qualify for support, you need to show what's already happened.
Yeah.
Which is tough, because if you are, you know, if you, like many Australians, are sort of living month to month, having a whole month where you've got to wait before you can then qualify for a payment, how do you pay your bills in that month?
Totally. And it's a lot, I'm finding, you know, there just seems to be a lot of kind of loopholes that are working in the government's favour and not necessarily in the self-employed favour. Like, for example, people in the arts and entertainment industry who have not been contracting to the one employer for a long period of time because they're working on different movies or, you know, doing stage productions or whatever it might be. And so they're not actually eligible for JobKeeper.
No. And same for casual employees. If you are a casual employee but you haven't been – if you've not been with your employer for more than 12 months, so if you've been there less than 12 months, sorry, that would be an easier way to explain it, then you may not be eligible for some of the support payments. And this is where lobbyist groups and unions are really stepping up and trying to deal with, I guess, for lack of a better term, but these fringe scenarios. Because I think we know what the government looks to do is they're like, okay, how can we solve the biggest problem for the largest cohort? Solve that. And then it's like, okay, how do we then deal with the second biggest group of people and the third largest group of people? And then they kind of go down in that order. But you're right. Yeah, it's really tough if you're in one of those unusual scenarios where you might be a foreign student working in Australia and, you know, you've paid your uni bills but you need to work in a cafe to pay your rent but that cafe is closed down, you're not eligible for
government. And also I guess, like, for a lot of millennials in, say, the hospitality industry, you don't usually stay with an employer as a casual for 12 months. Like, most people are moving around quite a bit.
Yeah, there's a lot of people that will be really doing it tough there. If you're a part of a union, that would be a good place to chat to. I mean, even just if you can get on to Centrelink, having a chat to them and seeing what other support can you get. But also I really love looking at the moneysmart.gov.au website, because for anyone experiencing hardship, there is things that you can do in terms of, and I'm just trying to get the little links up, but, you know, in terms of financial support, financial counselling if you're worried about debt payments. And if, like, irrespective of whether you're in the situation where you can or can't get government support, if you are struggling to make ends meet, there is help out there. We've got the National Debt Helpline. You've got your St. Vinny's, your Lifeline, your Salvation Army, and they'll help with things like food or maybe accommodation if you're in, you know, if you really are struggling. If it's just like you're struggling to make your bill payments, so maybe like your loan payments with the bank or something like your phone provider or electricity provider, contact them and let them know what's going on. A lot of them have.
In case you haven't heard, it's a corona pandemic.
Yeah. Heads up. They're like, really? Thank you. but they will often have hardship relief that they can provide to you when you are struggling financially. So don't keep it to yourself. Don't struggle in silence. Ask for help. And like, I know, you know, often we'll feel embarrassed about asking for help or feeling shame that we're in this situation. Put those feelings aside. Don't let that get in the way of you asking for support, because so many people are feeling this right now. And there's lots of people that want to help. I'm seeing really heartwarming things around people making care packs for, you know, for example, someone who's got a mobility issue. making care packs and delivering them, or there's lots of people donating to different centres like your Vinnies, like your Salvation Army, so that they can provide more community support. So it is out there, and it's just that, you know, for a lot of us, we've lived the good life for most of our lives, and we've never thought we'd ever have to call on these things, but sometimes shit happens. And you need to ask for help, and there is no shame in asking for help, because if we can see this thing through, we will come out the other side. Life will go on, jobs will resume. It's just about getting through this really tough period.
Absolutely. So let's talk a little bit about dipping into savings, and in particular dipping into super, because I have a feeling I know what you're going to say here, but it's very tempting to be able to do this.
Yeah, I was Molly and I wrote an article this week, and one of my lines was, "Don't touch your face, don't touch your super."
Yeah, I know. I saw the article and I was like, oh, shit, damn it.
But look, I mean, I put a caveat on that. If you're experiencing extreme financial hardship, it may make sense to touch your super. So I would kind of go in this kind of, I would sort of approach it with this level of priority. So, you know, what government support can I get? What financial relief can I get would be my first port of call. My second port of call would be like, okay, what savings can I dip into? Because, you know, we always say savings are for those OMG moments, for that rainy day. This qualifies.
Yeah, I was going to say, this is an OMG moment, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. This is why we have these savings. So then dip into that. And then if, you know, if it means like you might need to move back in with family for a while, or if it does mean you've got to reach out to agencies like your St. Vinny's or your Lifeline or whatever, like do that. And then if you've sort of exhausted all of those and dipping into your super is an option, then potentially do that. It is capped at $10,000. So you can pull out $10,000 in this financial year, so from now until June 30, and then you can pull out a second $10,000 next financial year, so after the 1st of July. The thing I caution is that super is there to support you in your retirement. And say you're about 30 years old today, and you take out $10,000 from your super, what that $10,000 would equal when you retire in, at, say, 65, would be around that $50,000 mark. So,
wow.
So if for every dollar you take out today, you're sort of denying yourself about $5 in the future.
Okay. See, that is what I needed to hear.
And that's on a conservative assumption. I've assumed, like, that your super is making an average of 6% per annum over 35 years. It's not insignificant, and that's why it's a, like, you know, make sure you've explored alternative avenues of support before you go to the super one. But of course, if you're in extreme financial hardship, you're not thinking about 35 years time. You're like, I need to feed my family today. I need to feed myself. I need to keep this roof over my head.
Yeah.
And I get it. So, again, it's just about, go with what can I get from the government? What can I get from supportive agencies? What savings do I have? Okay, I've exhausted all of those. Now it's time to look at the super. But make it a last priority.
Last priority. Option. Now, I did hear a little rumor about a loophole in the super scheme at the moment. Have you heard about this?
More details? Which one?
I think, okay, I want to get this right, and sure. But I might not. I think there's something about if you put $10,000 into super, and then you take $10,000 out of super, you're not paying any tax on that. Is that right?
So if you, I'm just like literally thinking how that would work
as
talking right now. So caveat, if someone's listening to this and they're like, that's wrong, Betsy, sorry.
Don't take this as financial advice. This is me just wondering.
So when you make a contribution to super, it's taxed at 15% on the income it earns. So it goes in pre-tax, and then I guess, yeah, you pull it out. So, yeah, you possibly could save tax. I really wouldn't try to use that tax strategy. Maybe. Not something I'd be advising people to do.
I probably read it on Batuta Advocate, let's be honest.
Technically, I suppose that could work, but I feel like that we've all got bigger fish to fry.
Absolutely.
Do that. So, yeah.
What do you think about people who haven't necessarily lost their jobs and they're still employed, they're on salary still? We don't really know the economic outcome of this on the country, but I mean, we can imagine it's not going to be wonderful. Are there systems that people should start thinking about or putting in place?
Oh, hell yeah. There has never been a better time to prioritize your financial well-being than now. So, yeah, I would say this is a great opportunity to focus on your finances and start building some financial resilience. So, five things that I would do, and in this order, would be, first of all, take stock of where are you with your finances? It seems like an obvious thing, but as we all know, a lot of us, we don't like looking at the money. It sounds boring, painful, yuck. I'd rather stick pins in my eyes. But it's you'll really appreciate your money when you're in a financial crisis and it's there to get you out of a tight spot. So first of all, take stock. And what I mean by that is write down everything you own, write down any money that you owe. So credit cards, personal loans, car leases, home loans, investment loans, IOUs, fines, whatever. Write them down. Then write down all your income, and then write down where you're spending your money on. So, and that sort of tells you where you are right now. So if you own more than you owe, that means you are have a net wealth positive position, meaning like you're worth more than the money that you owe people. So that's good. That's what you're aiming for. And then the second would be if you earn more than you spend, that's what you're aiming for as well. So you want to have money left over after you've paid out all your bills.
Yeah.
Now, I get it. Checking out all your spending sounds hideous. Don't worry, there's an app for that. So there's apps like Pocketbook or Foo, F-U app, and you just connect them to your bank accounts. Obviously, you've got to consent to sharing your data, but they will do a monthly budget for you and help you figure out, are you in the green, as in you've got money left over, or are you in the red, which means you have less, you like spend more than you earn. So do that first. Second thing I always like to do is reprioritize your spending at a time like this. So once you've figured out where all your cash is going, look at it and, you know, maybe even write down next to it, is that a high priority spend, something that is not negotiable, you've got to pay that. Often this is things like your bills, like rent and electricity and buying food and stuff. Write down what's a medium priority spend, so something that's important to you but you could do away without if you had to. These are things that like are important to you. So like for me, I really love my Glam Corner subscription because it's eco-friendly and it sends me nice clothes and it makes me feel good about myself. So that's one where I'm like, medium priority spend.
I was going to say, can I make hair my high priority?
Yes, you can. Yes, this is the thing. Personal finances are personal. Like, yeah, I'm with you. My hair, high priority spend. But, you know, for my husband, it's probably low priority, let's be honest.
And I guess it is a good time to think about financial priority because a lot of the things that we're spending lots of money on, we aren't able to do at the moment. So going out for dinners, you know, going out for drinks, spending money on clothes. I mean, no one can see them at the moment. So we've kind of realized that maybe they're not as much of a priority as we make them out to be.
Yeah, and look, and they're potentially just not a priority for right now. And this is where the reprioritizing are kind of helpful because, you know, at different times of the year, we've got different priorities. So just dialing up the priority stuff and dialing down the low priority stuff. So, you know, paying for a gym membership right now when you can't actually go to your gym, I don't know if that makes sense. And hopefully most of the gyms have paused memberships, but yeah. Something like that where you're paying for something that you're not using, well, you might want to switch that off. And then when life returns to normal, turn it on again. That's totally fine. But it's just having a look and going, okay, where can I cut back? And by doing that, then, you know, use that money and put it into either paying off high interest debt. So high interest debt is anything that costs you more than 10% in an interest rate, so typical credit cards. Or if you don't have high interest debt, prioritize topping up or even starting some emergency savings and, you know, aim to have $1,000. But I always encourage people to save 3 to 6 months worth of expenses in emergency savings for things like you can't work for 3 months because of a global pandemic.
Yeah.
And then the fifth thing is if you can diversify your sources of income, that's good. So if you have a full-time job, can you start a little side hustle to make extra money? Or can you even just start, selling things that you don't need anymore rather than just throwing them away? Or you can diversify income through investing. It's a little bit more long-term, but definitely a good long-term goal to have is to have more than one source of income.
Yeah, I feel like I've got about a million sources of income.
Yeah.
It's a lot. So what do you think are some money savvy moves we can all start to make? So we've set up, we've reprioritized our spending. We're taking stock of where everything's going, topping up our emergency savings, diversifying our income. But what can we do on a really kind of practical level?
Yeah, well, I'd start with, and you might have done a bit of this when you're reprioritizing the spending, but I like to call it like Marie Kondo your bills. So like I said, if there's something that you're paying for and you're not using, you might want to do away with that. Or it could be just using this time where we're not out socializing and busy being fabulous to go, okay, I am actually going to look at my electricity bill and compare it to other providers and see if I can switch to save some money. Or, it's been a couple of years since I looked at my home loan rate. I'm going to compare it with similar home loans in the market and see if there's a better rate out there and ask my bank to match it or, you know, refinance to a better deal. That's really easy ways to save money. And I'm like, what else are you going to do with this time apart from Netflix? So that would be two of the things I'd say. And then I don't know about you, Jordana, but I'm spending a lot of time on my phone and, like, those are great little marketing tools these days. I'm getting so many ads for like Bondi hair wave things and I don't know, lights to make me look good if I'm doing an Insta story and just like so much marketing. Yeah. So another one I love doing every sort of 12 months or so is unsubscribing to marketing emails that I don't like or I don't need in my life anymore. There's a great tool called un.roll and you can unenroll from all marketing emails or you can go through and select which ones you want to keep. And that's a great way if you're like constantly receiving emails telling you about 50% off winter boots or something like that.
So it is so tempting, isn't it? Especially when we're at home and a lot of the things that, you know, raise our endorphins, like being out in the world, have been taken away. Sometimes online shopping can feel the same.
Oh, you should have seen me when I got my Glam Corner delivery yesterday.
What is Glam Corner?
Molly, if Molly is listening to this, she's going to roll her eyes and laugh at me talking about it. But it's, well, it started out as a place where you could hire dresses. So a couple of years ago,
I thought it was.
Yeah, yeah. So, like, I was in peak wedding season and it was just bloody bankrupting me. So started hiring dresses, but then they actually have a wardrobe subscription. And just by the way, this is not sponsored. Just really happy customer. But I subscribe to them because I love fashion and looking good, but obviously, like, I'm trying to be smart with money and all of that. So I was like, how can I, you know, get access to great clothes without having to pay the full price for them? And then also I'm concerned for the environment, and fashion is one of the biggest contributors to environmental waste.
Yeah.
And so by subscribing to a wardrobe and not buying one, it was a way for me to reduce my fashion consumption.
But what does that mean to subscribe to a wardrobe?
Oh, it's so good. So you pay, I think it's like $150 a month for the top subscription, and they send you three items of clothing at a time. So I usually get like dresses or coats or whatever. And then once you've worn them, you send them back. You don't have to clean them or anything like that. And then you send it back and they send you new stuff. And they, like, they've got so many.
Do you always like what you receive?
Sometimes I get it wrong. Sometimes I go a little bit.
Do you get to choose?
Yeah, you choose them.
Oh,
yeah.
You choose. They're not just like sending you stuff and like.
No. And they, you've got like stylists on there that can help you figure out what you should be wearing for your, you know, color tone and shape and size, which is super handy, honestly.
Oh, that's so fun.
Fun. I'm such a glam corner crazy fan, but I love it because I do love fashion and dressing up, but I don't want to spend the money and I also don't want to impact the environment. So this is like the perfect solution.
And
for
are they
me.
Always like current season stuff?
Yeah. And it's like all these designs. It's really great for finding new like designers that you like and stuff. Like, I'm really into like Australian fashion at the moment. I'm trying to support local. And there's, right now, you can't see me, but I'm wearing this really cute Faithful, the brand dress. I really like it. It's kind of fun. And yeah.
Betsy, I love this. And I think that initially it sounded like a big splurge, but I actually think it's a big money saver.
Well, personally, it's been for me because I went down and then just like built a capsule wardrobe and like I'm totally girling out right now, so forgive me.
No, I'm loving it.
But so, you get your really good pairs of jeans, your great white tee, your good coats, your good shoes, and then I accessorize with my glam corner, and that's when I buy, the puffy sleeved hot pink kind of frau shirt where it's so statement, you can only wear it once or twice and then you sort of everyone's seen it before and you kind of get over it yourself or the fashion changes. So I get that stuff from Glam Corner, but then I invest in like really good quality pieces that you wear, like your jeans and your sneakers and stuff that you wear all the time. But
do you ever become attached to a garment?
Yeah, and then I just rehire it.
Oh, okay. Oh, of course you can rehire it.
Yeah, and then but I have bought a couple of items. Like I discovered this new label called FWD Forward or FWRD or something like that. And they had this just really gorgeous dress that I hired for a couple of weeks in a row, and I was like, okay, I'm going to buy this because I obviously love it. So,
and do you buy it from Glam Corner?
I usually go then to the fashion label, but they do also sell their garments after like a certain time, and you end up getting like pieces for like 60-70% off the retail price. So, so they do that, but yeah, so sometimes some of your loved pieces come out there. But you know what? For some reason, Zimmerman never seems to be in there, and it makes me sad.
Oh, I love Zimmerman so much.
Oh, they've got heaps of, like, Zimmerman and, yeah.
One of the terrible things that, well, not terrible because there's nothing terrible about living in Byron Bay, but I don't get an opportunity to wear Zimmerman dresses very often, you know?
Yeah, because, it's cool coastal boho chic.
Yeah.
Anyway.
But I do miss city dressing sometimes. Like as a city gal who grew up in the city, eastern suburbs, I really miss that.
I feel you. I feel when I'm like back on the farm heading home to see the fam, the cows really just don't appreciate my fashion. And it's deeply impractical if you're trying to get over a fence or something.
Yeah. That's
so funny. So yeah, time and place.
So do you – any sort of last little money tips or words for people who are just feeling a little bit down in the dumps really about their financial situation at the moment?
Yeah, I would say, what would I say? First of all, you have everything within you to create financial well-being for yourself. I know we receive these messages that the world of finance is complicated and you need to pay, you know, advisors lots of money to tell you how it works. But basic financial well-being is super simple, and most of it's just about habits and mindset. And if you got through grade 5 math, then, you know, you can absolutely understand the world of finance. And two, there's a lot of resources out there that are fun and engaging, that where you can learn about money and so forth. And so just get educated about it. And I would say three is, like, particularly if you're a woman, if you are listening and you're like, oh, I just feel so bad that I don't get this money thing and I don't understand it, first of all, forgive yourself and then decide to get educated. But forgive yourself, because the world of finance has not been inclusive to women, especially for decades. It was only like a couple of decades ago that you couldn't open a bank account without the consent of a man. And, you know, a lot of the financial products that are out there don't actually account for the kind of patterns of women's lives and so forth. So,
oh, that is so good to know.
Yeah. So a lot of your, like, financial planning products and even superannuation, right, a lot of it, the, like, analysis that people do around it is based on the assumption that your income is consistent across your lifetime and continually goes up. And as we know, for women in particular, that is not the case, particularly if you start a family. Yeah. So there's lots of people working to change that now, because women are becoming more economically empowered. We're earning more. But also, women are inheriting a lot more wealth. I think 2/3 of the world's wealth is set to be inherited by women over the next couple of decades.
What does that mean? What do you mean by that?
Well, so when families pass away, traditionally money would go to the men in the family, but society's changed a lot, and, you know, more and more wealth is distributed more fairly across men and women. And this is sort of looking at a global trend, because Australia's sort of been this way for a while, but globally more women are able to inherit money and control money. So it basically just means that more women have financial control of themselves and their lives, which is exciting, because women do make money and have money. We tend to spend it on our families.
Yeah.
We tend to spend it on things like community and education, and invest in areas that create social change. So I get very excited, because I'm like, great, this, all those things that we care about, if more women control money, then I think we'll see a lot more attention to things like ethical investing and so forth. So, so anyway, I've gone on a bit of a tangent there.
No, I think that's really interesting. I mean, look, you've worked with me before in this capacity, at me as student, you as coach, where I don't actually understand any of it. And because I never understood it to start with, I just decided that I would never understand it ever. And so when you start to explain it like that, in the way that the system isn't actually set up for us to understand it,
it
makes you feel a lot better about it.
Honestly, if you want proof, just chuck finance into Google. You will find a sea of blue and stacks of money and charts and a lot of serious men in suits, and you're like, god damn it, where are all the women? Where am I? But it's really changing, and like something in my day job that I'm working with some exciting ladies on is how do we change the world of finance so that's more inclusive, so that it speaks to people in a way that is engaging and fun, because why shouldn't money be fun? But also helping and thinking about what products and services will actually serve the broader community better, because a lot of them, like I said, they've been created by men for men, and that's not like a bad thing. I'm not anti-men or anything like that. I just would like it to be a little bit more accommodating to the broader community. And so I'm working on like, well, how can we do that? Which I think is a really exciting thing and an exciting time to be alive. Because particularly as I was saying, like when women are economically empowered, we tend to use it to, like I said, take care of families, invest in education, invest in businesses, invest in social change. So we like to use money as a force for good, which I'm really excited to see the impact of over the next few decades.
Oh, beautiful. Where can people find out more about you, Betsy, and what you do?
Yeah, well, I'm on all the platforms. So I do two things. I am a financial coach, as you know, for myself at BetsyWescott.com, and I'm on Instagram as Ms. Betsy Westcott. I am also the head money coach for the Fabulous Ladies Finance Club, which has, I think, featured in some of your programs. So I do that with Molly Benjamin. So you can find us at Ladies Finance Club. And our website is ladiesfinanceclub.com. And because I'm a dorky corporate, you can also find me on LinkedIn.
That's not dorky. I'm also on LinkedIn. I don't think you need to be a dorky corporate to be there.
Thanks, Ben. Honestly, it's my best platform.
do you guys have a money boot camp coming up?
Oh, yes. Oh, my God. How remiss of me not to mention it. But, yes, we do. I'm really excited about this. So it's a six-week group coaching course. We do it online at 8 p.m. every Wednesday. We're kicking off this Wednesday coming, so Wednesday the 15th of April. And, yeah, it's 6 weeks. I love this course because it's all the things we should have learnt, I don't know, from our families or at school or something. It's the beginning of your financial journey. If you're like, all right, I'm gonna financially adult this year, I'm gonna get my house in order, I'm gonna learn about these things. This is a really fun course, BYO wine or yummy drink from Butcher, whatever floats your boat. We meet at 8 o'clock on a Wednesday and we go through everything from your relationship with money and your money story to becoming a cash flow queen and learning how to manage your money in minutes. Then we go on to the world of investing because for so long, women have received messages about being thrifty and saving, and that's good. What we don't get taught or spoken to is how do we go from saving to investing, which is when you start using your money to grow and your money starts making money. So we do the real foundations of what is investing, what do you need to understand, how do you get started safely. I explain what superannuation is and why you shouldn't touch your face or touch your super. And then how to buy a house, because I know that's a big dream for a lot of people and a really big priority. So how do you make yourself a really attractive home loan candidate? How do you look to buy a house? What happens after you win at auction or things like that? And then to finish, I talk about how do you keep yourself safe? So what are the things you can put in place to make sure that all these good things that you've built up are safe from life's little surprises like global pandemics or illness or relationship breakdowns or things like that. So cover all of those things. And it's fun. I know I'm probably sound like I'm selling it to you, but I genuinely believe it's fun.
No, I never find finances fun, but you and Molly do make them a little bit more fun than the average financial people.
We hope so, because like, why not? It's a fundamental part of life, and I don't know who decided it should be boring, because like, I bloody love money. It allows me to do all the fun things.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? Like, we love spending money, and I mean, I love receiving money, but I don't love money. So it's like this real sort of, it's this real kind of battle.
And it's because like, we've had people like tell us we're bad with it and we don't get it and it's really restrictive if we want to do ahead with it, and it's like no, it's all about engaging with it, prioritizing it along with what's important to us and our values, and then learning how to make it work harder.
Love it.
Yeah, love chatting to you, Jordana.
Love chatting to you too. Thank you for coming on the show. It's so funny, I haven't done interviews on Lunar Lover for a really long time, but I just think that right now people need to hear from people who make them feel like it's okay to be going through whatever we're going through right now.
Yeah, so true. And we need to come together. I mean, we're social creatures. I'm sure as hell am. And I don't know. I feel better when I know other people are dealing with stuff. And I feel better knowing that, like, that we're going to get through this and being given tools to help us get through it. And I think that's something you do so well, is enabling people to realize that they've got this. Mm. They've got all the things they need to make it happen.
Yeah, awesome. make it happen.
Pun intended.
I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Betsy Westcott. If you did, I would love if you take a screenshot on your phone and post it to your Instagram stories, tagging me at Jordana Levine and Betsy at Ms. Betsy Westcott. That's M-S. Betsy Westcott. There's been a few new additions to the Lunar Lover membership. I've just introduced yin yoga classes. So every week you get a new yin yoga class in line with the energy of the moon. So depending where it is in the cycle will depend on what we do throughout the class. That's at no extra cost to the usual $22 a month, which also includes 2 online moon circles, one on the new moon, one on the full moon. You get journal prompts for both new moon and full moon, and you get a beautiful guided meditation every new lunar cycle. If you'd like to become a Lunar Lover member, all you have to do is head to the link in the show notes of this episode or jordanalevine.com/Lunar Lover. I've also taken away the 12-month commitment, so you can sign up for Lunar Lover and cancel at any time. However, I do ask that if you can afford it and you are enjoying it, that you stick around. Until next moon, I'm Jordana Levine, and you've been listening to Lunar Lover, the podcast.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.